Welcome to Trent Voices, the Trent University Alumni Affairs show on Trent Radio. I'm your host, Donald Fraser of Alumni Affairs. It is Tuesday, February the 9th, and this is episode 28. My guest today will be recognizable to listeners in both Peterborough and Toronto. And even if you don't recognize him by face, you will as soon as he begins to talk. His dulcet tones have been a staple at 680 News, CBC Radio, CKPT here in Peterborough, and right here at Trent Radio. Those of you who are regular listeners to CBC's Ontario Morning will instantly think that it is Friday morning right now when you hear these two voices meet.
Okay, let's start with the United Way. Last week it announced its 2015 fundraising campaign total, and unfortunately, it didn't hit the market. Set back in September. What happened?
The target set by the agency in the fall was just a shade under $2.3 million way. And CEO Jim Russell announced last Friday that they'd raised $1.9 million, so not quite $400,000 shy of its goal.
So is it clear why they came up short this year?
Well, let me take you back to mid-December, which is the last time we spoke about the campaign.
And have you figured out who my guest is this week? I bet many of you have. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome Jack Rowe to Trent Voices. Welcome, Jack.
Well, nice to have the opportunity to be here. Thanks very much.
Well, you know what? I'm happy to be on this side.
Or back here.
Or back here.
Although I was never in this building.
No, this is, you know, we'll get to this in a second. First of all, I'm really thankful to be on this side of the of the microphone for a change. I think it's less work.
Well, I'm a little intimidated being on this side, I have to tell you.
Well, good.
It's rare for me to be over here.
Well, we're going to get to Trent Radio in a second.
Sure.
Because there's a whole bunch of history that we have to unpack. First of all, okay, you know, I've been associated with radio for a long time in a number of different means and ways. And that voice, you know, I mentioned your dulcet tones, and you've got a lovely radio voice.
Well, thank you. Flattery will get you everywhere.
Are you born with that, or is that cultivated?
No, I didn't do any training for it. It's funny, when I was in high school, a very close friend of mine, now happens to be the mayor of Toronto, John Tory, said, "You should be in radio."
Yes.
Nah, John. So I went off to study philosophy and English at Trent, thinking that was going to be where I ended up. And here I am.
You know, your early radio career is kind of one big accident, isn't it?
I fell into it.
Yeah,
absolutely fell into it.
You came to Trent Radio thinking, hey, I'm going to be a techie. And then what happened?
Well, the night I came, I think there was a sign on the wall that said technicians were being trained that night. I probably read it wrong. And I showed up and they were auditioning announcers. So I thought, well, what the heck, I'm here. And I read what about 9 or 10 other people read. And the guy who was producing the show, and for the life of me, I can't remember who it was, said, "You stay, I want you."
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. I was hooked.
Wow.
Yeah, and the next year I was running the radio service. It was called the radio service back then.
Yes, Trent Radio Service.
Yeah, not station, because we didn't have a transmitter. We used CKPT for a 3-hour live and a 4-hour taped for what is now The Wolf.
Yeah.
Was then CFMP FM.
So you guys were still recording down in Bata, weren't you?
Basement of the Bata Library, yeah. And we did our live shows from there as well. We had a link up to CKBT Studios in the Empress Hotel.
You know, okay, well, I want to get to the Empress Hotel because Pete Dalladay says, Jack's going to have some great stories about that. But I want to know what Trent Radio looked like first. You know, back in 73, 74, 75, when you were doing this gig, what was Trent Radio like?
Well, it was the basement of the Battle Library. It was actually lovely studios. They were the recording studios for what I guess are still there to be used for voice work that Trent does. Do they still do voice work for people who are hard of hearing?
Yeah,
well, that's the same studio. Mm-hmm. So it was two turntables and two tape decks and a microphone. And that was it. And we had to actually unlock the Battle Library at night. We had keys to the library.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I think liability issues would
probably
preclude that in 2016.
Although, you know what? Knock on wood, as far as I know, nobody ever stepped out of bounds.
Well, I've talked to a number of the people who just precluded you a little bit.
Chris Ward and Stephen Stone.
Actually, you've got history with Christopher Ward as well.
Well, his cousin and I are the closest of friends, and so Chris used to show up when our band used to play, and then I kind of followed Chris around. He came to Trent. He worked at CKPT and left, and I got his job, and two people removed, but yeah.
And then you went on to marry Alana Miles. no, sorry, that actually did not happen.
No, it didn't, but I can't even sing her song.
I take a look, and you've got a degree, and it is signed and dated 1991. However, you started here in 1973.
Okay, I was on the 20-year program.
Yeah, but there's...
Thanks for bringing that up.
Well, you had a great reason,
okay,
though.
I did. Well, I got a full-time job.
Yeah, I mean, how often does this happen when, you know, you're a kid, you know, in the early 70s, you're at Trent Radio, and then who comes knocking?
CKPT. Yeah. Said, you want to do the all-night show? I said, you're joking, of course.
Yeah.
It was costing me $660 a year to go to university, and that was a lot of money in those days.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah. So in my third year, I ditched it. Yeah. Took a full-time job. And it wasn't until I was almost 40 when I went back. Okay. I did a history degree, though, because I wanted to learn how to write better and how to research better. Mm-hmm. And that's worked out.
Well, I was going to get back to the fact that you persevered. I mean, you headed off on a career at a really early age, found some great success, and then came back full circle and decided to hit Trent University again. But CKPT, what was that like? When you're a pretty young kid, and all of a sudden, hey man, I'm on real radio now.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of young kids working there. Actually, now that I look back, I was the youngest and certainly the most green behind the ears. But it was a cool place to work. I had a really good mentor, a guy named Ken Cassavoy, who was the program director at the time. And John Manal, who was the general manager for years afterwards, he was my general manager when I was a program director there. And John just passed away recently. Mm-hmm. But those two men, along with Al Portis, who's still around, and Al's probably listening to this as we speak, was the news director at the time. And those three people were the linchpins of that radio station, made it a community station, brought it up from the depths of beyond, because it had been sort of driven into the ground, and made it into Peterborough's station.
So you're really making your mark in Peterborough, because you're an on-air personality. You recognize Peterborough really loves its media sources, its media people, and you become really recognizable. And yet you're still really active on the Trent scene. In particular, you're bringing some great acts into Peterborough, and in particular to the Commoner. So you and a fellow student, Jim Moon, you sign folks to the Commoner, people like David Bradstreet, the original Sloth Band, Ken and Chris Whiteley. For those who aren't folk music aficionados, let me tell you, they are the cream of the Canadian crop. Willie P. Bennett, Peterborough legend, Canadian legend, all kinds of wonderful folks. So how'd you get into that particular gig?
Well, Jim actually came from Guelph, and he knew the guys in London who were running Smale's Place. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the sort of premier spots in Western Ontario. If you were on the circuit, you went there, and then you went to somewhere like the Riverboat in Toronto, and then you went to the Commoner eventually. We built it up as a result of knowing those people and getting the contacts. And the funny thing is that a lot of these people would be playing in Toronto and then have a gig in, say, Montreal.
Yeah.
Peterborough's right in between, and we'd catch them on a Thursday night, and they'd stop.
So you were a year or two removed from the scene that would have gotten, you speak of the Riverboat, you could have gotten Neil Young or a Joni or something. You're 2 years off, I think.
Well, yeah, maybe, although we did get Jerry Jeff Walker.
Yeah.
For a bar stool, a bottle of Jack Daniels, and a round trip ticket by bus to Austin, Texas. That's what it cost us.
Wow.
The next year he had the Lost Gonzo band, so we couldn't afford him. No.
all this seems to make sense, because in your pre-Trent days, back before you came to Trent University, just out of high school, your first gig was a talent agent. And so it leads me to a rumor that needs to be cleared up here. you were almost arrested in East Germany, before the wall came down. Truth? Fact? Fiction?
No, it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks to a guy named Alan Levin. Alan, if you're listening, I still have not forgiven you. He lives in Philadelphia, and he was and probably still is, if he's alive, 10 years older than I. So I was 18, hitchhiking through Europe, and I picked up with him in Switzerland, and we drove together. And he suddenly decided he wanted to go to Berlin. So you had to actually cross into East Germany to get to Berlin, because Berlin was his island in the middle of East Germany. So you're crossing through 100 miles of Eastern German territory. And he was going about 80 miles an hour. And the posted speed limit was 80 kilometers an hour. So out of nowhere came this guy, a soldier, with a rifle across his chest.
Wow.
And stopped us in the middle of nowhere. And speaking just German, he said, 50 kilometers. And I knew enough. My uncle had given me about five phrases. Yeah. I said, Alan, you got to go like 50 kilometers, not, oh, no, no. He says, isn't this the Autobahn? So that's when I pushed him over and got in behind the wheel and drove 50 kilometers an hour the rest of the way into Berlin. It was the loading of the rifle that no, it was true. It was a
bolt lock.
Bolt action. Yeah. So the click 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 when he repeated the 50 kilometer. That I thought, okay, maybe we should just do what he says.
You know, that language is universal. That
the bolt action rifle.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It speaks German and English. In the similarly bizarre, yet integral to your career development category, so your time with CKPT, and which has a pretty interesting arc in itself. Later on in your days with CKPT, you hosted and produced a daily current affairs show. And your guests over the years were all over the map. So you've got Canadian music legends like Colleen Peterson. You've got an almost Beatle in Pete Best. Mm. You've got Chris Hadfield, you know, fresh-faced astronaut at the time, back in 92, I think we nailed down. Ernst Zundel, which many people will recognize as the world-famous Holocaust denier. And then a guy who used to blow himself up at county fairs.
Yeah.
So this sounds like one of the best gigs you can have in radio.
It absolutely is. I mean, Chris Hadfield was the absolute best interview I ever did.
I bet.
It wasn't in the studio. I had to tape it because he was visiting his son at Lakefield College School, and I knew somebody who was teaching there. So I got in the back door and got 20 minutes with the guy. And he had just returned from his first flight. And I thought, what can I ask this guy? Because I don't want to ask him all the stupid questions, you know, how do you go to the toilet in space, that sort of thing. So I said, well, what did you do with your downtime? He went, oh, no one's ever asked that. He said, yeah, we had like 8 hours a day off and, you know, everybody be asleep. And he said, I decided before I went up there, it was a 13-day mission. And he said, I can survive on 3 hours a day for 13 days. So the other five, I would float out into the cockpit. And, of course, the cockpit is turned towards the Earth, if you can imagine. So he's got this glass below him and he floated out into it. And he said, and I was my own satellite.
Wow.
And watch the Earth go by every 90 minutes. And I could hear the wonder in his voice. It was like a kid. Mm-hmm. Because he had started at the age of 10 when he saw the moon landing. He turned to his dad and he said, I'm going to do that. And he did.
It's funny. I mean, you listen to his cover of David Bowie, and all of a sudden this resonates a whole lot more because he was feeling that. You know, being alone in a tin can and looking across.
Absolutely. And he was excited still about it. And I think he still is. You can still hear it in his voice.
Well, let's talk about being excited then for a second, because you're in Peterborough and you're doing a regional show and you're getting guests like Pete Best and Ernst Zundel and folks like this. How does that happen? How does a Peterborough show get these guests?
You know what? You'd be surprised. You pick up the telephone and you call them and you say, hey, I'm doing a show. I'd like to interview you. Are you available?
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, they'll say yes. It's just a matter of trying to find where they are. And people like Zundel, of course, wanted all the press he could possibly get. And I'm of the opinion that you allow those people to hang themselves. Yeah. You know, you don't go the other route and say, no, they shouldn't have the airtime. No, absolutely. Put them on the air and let them be the fools they are. But people like Pete Best, for instance, he was coming through town.
Yeah.
He was in Belleville playing with a band. And I just said, well, you know, stop by. I'll pay your... I'll pay your bus fare up to Peterborough.
I think this should be a lesson and to young students and to alumni who are listening to this about how to go forward in life, and that's not being afraid to not just ask the questions but start the conversations.
What's the worst that can happen? What do they say?
Well, Pete Best says no, and so then you go for Ringo.
Yeah, exactly. Or the All-Stars, which are more interesting.
Okay, important question here. Which conversation was more bizarre, Zundel or the guy who blew himself up?
Oh, well, that's interesting. Oh, let me tell you about Zundel. Yeah, my family's Jewish.
That's what I wanted to get to.
Yeah. So that was the most difficult interview, not necessarily the most bizarre. Certainly the most difficult interview I've ever done, because everything in my fiber, thinking of my grandparents having been booted out of Austria in 1938, just a half an hour ahead of the Nazis, thinking of wanting to take my hands down the we did it by phone. Take it down the phone line and grab him by the neck and shake him. But the broadcaster in me said, no, ask the right questions and he'll make the fool himself. And he did. It was a half-hour interview and he said all the right, wrong things.
Exactly.
but the most bizarre interview was by far Benny Boom Boom Koski. Benny Boom Boom Koski.
Gotcha.
Boom Boom. Yeah, he was from Oklahoma, I think, if I remember rightly. Certainly somewhere in the South. And he sat across from me. He was showing up at the exhibition.
Yeah.
And he would put himself in a car and he'd blow himself up. That was his gig. So I thought, so he walked into the studio and he sat down. And these days you could still smoke in the studios.
Yeah.
And his hand shook the whole time. he had his demorier in between his fingers and it was shaking away. And my first question to him, he didn't hear me.
Wow.
Because he was deafened by that. I said, so, Boom Boom, can I call you Boom Boom? What? Or can I call you what? Use the other ear, Benny. Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised that you could have open flame around him.
Yeah, you got to wonder.
Well, I want to talk a bit about the skill set that goes into talking to not just a Boom Boom, but an Ernst, and not just an Ernst, but a Colleen Peterson, and anyone, really. When you have a show like that, and it is a skill set that you've brought across your entire career, first of all, you need to research deeply. I mean, you're not doing yourself or your audience any service if you don't, and I know that you do. So you have to research, and then you have to do a communications balancing act where there are questions that you want to go and directions that you want to go. And there are directions that your guest wants to go, and there's information that your guest wants to go, and so you've got to balance these things out for a good story. So I'm wondering. Well, this all sounds, we're having deep research, we're having one-on-one or small group conversation. It sounds a whole lot like the Trent experience, and I want to know how your Trent experience really informed you as a journalist and a communicator.
It's a good question. I think I was taught to be a good listener. I took English literature first, and the young profs who were there in the mid-70s were wonderful at teaching you to listen to things and to hear the sounds and to accept things for what they were. So, and the fact that we had pretty much open mic with Trent Radio gave us the opportunity to try things that others were not going to try in a commercial radio scene. But I think the thing I ended up teaching for a couple of years to students at Loyalist College when I was doing teaching there for journalism, broadcast journalism, I said the first thing you've got to do is create 10 questions and be prepared to throw out the other 9. Because you can ask a question and then it's got to be a conversation. And you do it so well. I mean, you lead us down one path and then we jump to something else and you just listen to what I have to say. Sometimes that's more interesting. Sometimes it's not, and that's where you jump in. But if it's going somewhere, don't worry about your other 9 questions. You've got a fish on the hook. Let it run.
Well, and I've got a fish on the hook, and this isn't where I was going. But you teach radio. You teach journalism. You teach kids. And right now, Trent University has a wonderful new media studies program and a wonderful new journalism program. But it's a changing landscape. It is getting tougher and tougher to find your way because the funding isn't there, the ad revenue isn't there, and a lot of the times the newsrooms aren't there. What advice do you have as a guy who's trying to break into this gig and really make a go of it?
Stick your foot in the door.
Yeah.
You've got all sorts of opportunities online now that weren't available to me back then. Mm-hmm. For me, it was a matter of sticking my foot in a terrestrial radio station door and saying, I want to take part.
Yeah.
And eventually, they heard me and they took me on. Those opportunities aren't available so much anymore. You can't make your mistakes from midnight to 6 any longer because it's all canned music, most of it. But there's all kinds of opportunity online to do that sort of thing. record it, send it off to people, or just try it out. Come to Trent Radio,
yeah,
and give them a suggestion of a type of show you'd like to try. Why not?
I think we're entering the golden age of podcasting, mm-hmm. and I take a look at a couple of shows. I can think of Humble and Fred, who went from The Edge, who are now Canada's largest podcast. You have Canada Land, which is doing huge exposés on the state of Canadian journalism and politics. What's your thought on kids moving into that realm?
I think that's the future.
Yeah.
I remember my last couple of years as a news director for the Chum Group. I went to a conference in, doesn't matter where, Ottawa, I think. And this would have been 1998 or 9. And people were then worried, by that I mean other news directors, were worried about non-terrestrial radio stations starting mm-hmm. to make their way into the landscape. In other words, digital radio.
Yeah.
And I think it's taken over in a lot of ways. Terrestrial stations are becoming fewer and fewer.
Mm-hmm.
The landscape is now digital. So, yeah, use it. It's there. Make your own radio station. Heck, all you need is a microphone and a couple of egg cartons and don't allow your dog to bark while you're on the air.
That was what the first few episodes of this looked like, and you know what, it worked out well. But you do terrestrial radio, and I do want to get back to that. You've been at 680 News for a decade and almost a half now, mm-hmm. which is a very different world than CKPT, and you're a news anchor, which is a whole different kettle of fish. Take me through a day at 680 for Jack Rowe.
Okay, well, first of all, it's a team effort.
Yeah.
There are 8 people working on any one shift. So I have an editor, I have a co-anchor, usually a female. It's also, we have someone in traffic, we have mm-hmm. a sports person, we have somebody doing audio, and we have a reporter. So that's 7, sometimes 8. So all those people are coming together. So I arrive about an hour before I have to go on air. I go mm-hmm. on air at noon. I get there at 11. I'm listening all the way in from Peterborough, so I have an idea of what they're talking about. So I'm not an idiot when I walk in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes us about an hour to sort it out collectively as to what we're going to do. Are we going to carry on with the main story, the lead story, or are we going to switch gears and send our reporter somewhere else? And then it's a matter of keeping on top of it for 6 full hours. It is nonstop. It's a beast. Mm-hmm. It never stops.
Well, and it's so tight. And it's the antithesis of what I think a lot of people know as radio, because on the 11s, you're going to traffic and weather on. So mm-hmm. so you're going bang, bang, bang. You don't have time to miss your cue.
No, you can't.
No. And are you guys in the same room? Or?
Well, we're self-operated on the weekends. So Sarah and I are across from each other, and we're in a locked booth,
mm-hmm.
and our editor is within sight of us through the glass, and the other people are also within sight of us. But we control the show, and we have to hit every post. We have to make sure on the ones we're at traffic, at the quarter past, we're at sports, and so on. I have to tell you that having done radio 25 years, by the time I hit that mm-hmm. studio, I was scared to death that first night. Absolutely scared, because it's a format like no other.
Yeah.
And then once you get it, it's like, I'll tell you what, it's the difference between driving an automatic car and learning to drive a motorcycle. So everything is working, right? Both your hands, both your feet, and your eyes are always moving. And it's a constant battle against the clock. The clock is your enemy.
You were a musician. Did that help?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a really good sense of timing.
Yeah. It just gave me the whole notion of being able to play and sing, or play two instruments like guitar and harmonica at once. And
hey, I can still hit vocals.
Nice.
And I still do it in 680. And people go, how do you do that? Most of them haven't had the same background.
I'm going to have you back, and what we'll do, we'll have a sing-off.
Ah, okay.
We'll choose songs from our respective eras.
Uh-huh.
We'll see if we can hit the notes.
I got $20 says I'll do it better than you.
I got $20 that you will as well. This is a rigged bet. Unfortunately, I mentioned the day in the life of Jack Rowe. Sadly, unfortunately, this is a day in the life of Trent Voices. We are completely out of time. Jack, I'm going to have to get you back here because we've got a ton of stuff that we've got to talk about. First of all, your music, your acting, your apprenticeship as a tinsmith. Really, a tinsmith?
Yeah, period tinsmith.
A ton of topics that we really need to dig into. But in the meantime, I want to thank you for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jack. This has been Trent Voices. Our guest has been radio personality Jack Rowe. And, of course, an alumnus from 1973. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Trent Alumni on Twitter and the Trent University Alumni Association page on Facebook. I've been your host, Donald Fraser. And we will see you next week.